From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a family of four tried to find the right child care. Think about the cost of child care. How much do you expect to pay? What happens to families who are struggling? How can they find care? How can they figure out what kind of help they can get? Across the country, there are wide variations in the amount of help families get for child care. And even in New York State, there are differences from county to county for child care copays. New York State Assemblymember Jen Lunsford has put forward her first three bills, and they are all aimed at the cost of child care. We've asked her to join us to discuss the issues related to this at length, and she's on the line with us now. Jen Lunsford, member of the New York State Assembly, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Evan.
Before we dive in on child care, I want to mention to listeners who are maybe expecting the governor's regular appearance at this time. We haven't heard from the governor's office on a Friday briefing yet. For the last couple of months, he's been doing Monday, Wednesday, Friday, usually at 11:30, but we don't know. So right now, we'll see. And if the governor decides to have a daily or at least a Friday briefing, we will have it for you live, as always, you know, whether that's this hour, next hour, or perhaps later in the afternoon. We don't know offhand. And frankly, the governor, you know, he's faced a lot of criticism, even from some in his own party, some from the delegation here in the Rochester area. And Jen, I'll ask you briefly, as a member of the New York State Assembly, are you do you join some of the criticism of your colleagues of the governor?
I do. I think that it's important when discussing the issues surrounding the governor that we separate what has happened with the nursing homes and his emergency powers. I have been a proponent of stripping the governor of his extraordinary COVID-related emergency powers since before this most recent nursing home news hit, because I don't think he needs them anymore. They were designed to create an agile and consolidated response to an emerging dangerous situation. We are now in a position where we don't need that kind of speed, and I think that we can return the legislative authority back to the legislative branch and still have the means to control this in a meaningful way. When it comes to the nursing home issue, frankly, that could have happened with or without these powers. The governor had a lot of powers above and beyond what the legislature gave to him last March. And we obviously need to get to the bottom of not just what occurred in our nursing homes, but the cover-up that we're hearing. And I think, again, those are two separate buckets. What happened in our nursing homes and what was the cover-up, those need to be dealt with distinctly as well.
Yeah, and not to bog down on this, but just to kind of address a couple of other points. So, you know, the secretary to the governor is Melissa DeRosa, who's a lot of what is happening now stems from the New York Times and frankly, the New York Post. We'll give them credit, breaking the story that it was Melissa DeRosa in a call with some lawmakers.
Not me.
Not you.
Not me.
But essentially saying, we realize that we put you in a hard spot during your campaigns. And the reason that we, you know, I'm going to sum up what she said, even though they've walked some of it back. But what she did say in that call was essentially the federal government, the Trump administration, was asking for data on nursing homes. We know the New York State legislature was asking for data. But when the Trump Justice Department is asking for it, we froze because, you know, our concern was that the Trump administration would try to politicize this. And so we've been withholding information. And that flies in the face of what the governor has said for months. Now, they've walked some of that back, but, I mean, it seems pretty clear that that looks like that is what happened. I mean, they did release some data to the federal government, and they did not release the same data to the New York State legislature until February, which is pretty remarkable. Does that explanation work for you from Melissa DeRosa that, hey, you know we put you in a hard spot by withholding data and leaving things unclear here, but we were worried that this was going to be politicized by the Trump team, so we just weren't transparent?
It is wholly unacceptable to not provide data on nursing home deaths during a pandemic, on any deaths during a pandemic, especially when those inquiries are coming from either government. Transparency is essential to making the right decisions to keep our citizens safe. And while that fear may have been well-founded, I don't doubt that the Trump administration would have politicized that information. It doesn't justify withholding it. And that's the thing I think we need to get to the bottom of. When it comes to what happened in our nursing homes, there has been a very robust investigation by the Attorney General's office. And assuming we can ensure that the data the attorney general was given was adequate, I am happy accepting their findings with regards to the nursing home deaths and what failed and what caused that situation. But I am not satisfied that they had all the information they needed to appropriately assess that.
Yeah. And I take the point you're making here. I mean, sure, it probably would have been politicized. So what? I mean, everything is politicized. Mm-hmm. You know, that is not a reason not to be transparent. That's not a reason not to give data out, especially during a crisis. And then so last point on this, some of your Republican colleagues have actually called for a resignation of Governor Cuomo. Is that too far for you, or do you think that should be considered?
I would like to figure out what happens. I'd like to hear. I'm an attorney. I'm willing to accept that there are two sides to a story and that I would like to give the due process to this situation to ensure that we have all the information before making that determination. I don't know what the other side of the story could be, but I'm open to hearing it.
Okay. Do you feel that the governor has lost at least some trust then in his own party?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Talking to Jen Lunsford, member of the New York State Assembly. So your first three bills, one is on increasing the child and dependent care tax credit. One is capping child care co-pays, and one is on support for child care providers. And we're going to work through them one by one. But I want to start just by asking you, generally speaking, for listeners who understand just how tough it can be, how tough child care can be, the costs, et cetera. Who are these bills really aimed at, and what do you want people thinking about as we discuss these issues?
So we had a child care crisis in this country before COVID, and all COVID has done is cast into sharp relief the realities of child care for our working families. You know, we've all seen the statistics about the way this recession has hit working parents, particularly women. Women are leaving the workforce in a way that will probably take a generation for us to make up. And we need to find ways, as we did, you know, even before this pandemic, to make childcare, and not just any childcare, but quality childcare, accessible and affordable to everyone. You know, in my district, I have a lot of middle income families, and I hear all the time from people that they have had to choose between having another child or staying in their career path, or maybe not accepting a promotion because they wanted to have another kid. And we are put in this very difficult situation where, you know, even me as an attorney married to another professional, if I had twins, I wouldn't have been able to afford childcare for my son. The cost of it is, for me, especially when my son was an infant and the prices are very high, more than my student loans, more than my mortgage. And that is untenable in the society we live in. COVID has only made that worse.
I know that you know there are some listeners, and I'm not trying to sort of caricature, but generally speaking, more conservative folks would say, well, you don't have to work. You can raise the children.
I think that presupposes that every child is carefully planned and that people make a decision about what they want to do with their career at the same moment they have a child. And then for the next 18 years, nothing ever changes. That, you know, people have dynamic lives, people lose jobs, people move, situations change, and we can't always control. You know, I hear that from people now, some people without kids saying that parents who are working from home with kids who are out of daycare or remote learning, that they signed up for this when they had kids. I don't think they did. I don't think that people who had children expected to be working while also remembering how to do long division. And we have been forced into a situation that is untenable for our families. It's untenable for our children. And we need to find a way through that doesn't just Band-Aid over the crisis we're in now, but makes real meaningful change for when we're through this in accessing child care for all of our families.
Listeners, I would love to hear from you about child care and how you've been trying to manage, especially in the last year during the pandemic, but also just generally speaking, and the strain that you have felt with it. It's 844-295-TALK if you want to call the program, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994, or you can email the program connections@wxxi.org. And Assemblymember Lunsford just made, I think, a point that I want to circle back to and make sure that we consider pretty carefully here. We talked late in last fall about women leaving the workforce. So when you look at who has lost jobs during this pandemic, and we're talking about millions of Americans, in the early months of the pandemic, it was a majority women. It was like 55 to 60%. And then from September through the fall, it was nearly 80%. It was an unbelievable number, a disparity of women leaving the workforce compared to men. And so, Jen, when you say you're concerned about gains that women have made in, number one, just moving into the workforce, gaining a foothold, getting the kinds of jobs that women did not hold in large numbers 25, 30, 50 years ago, how concerned are you that in the last 11 months, the gains have not only been sort of slowed, but I don't know if the word permanent is fair, but at least semi-permanently erased?
They've absolutely been erased. And when I say a generation, I mean it. There's all kinds of studies that show that women who choose to take time off when their kids are small lose hundreds of thousands of dollars over the course of their careers. They end up with fewer advancement opportunities because that gap of even a few years has detrimental effects over a person's lifetime in their career. Women right now are making that decision in droves, and not just because their kids are little, but because their kids are 10 and they're in school. I have families in the legislature where we're sitting in session and legislators, both men and women, are surrounded by children doing science projects. It's a situation that is affecting everyone at every level. And we aren't being fair, I think, to the reality of this on our futures. We talk about this pandemic like it's going to end and everything's going to go back to normal, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, and next hour on this program, we're going to be having a conversation with the president of the Rochester Teachers Association, that's Adam Urbanski, along with a couple of parents who have filed petitions calling for the opening of Rochester schools. I think there are really thoughtful and careful arguments on all sides of reopening schools, and I know it can be sensitive, and we're going to try to hold a really good faith conversation next hour about that. But I also saw yesterday in another state, not New York State, there was a school board Zoom meeting, and someone thought, a member of the board thought they were muted, and they were basically mocking parents for wanting to reopen schools, saying, you know, oh, you just want babysitters, you know, and I found that sort of jaw-dropping because to the point you're making, Assemblymember Lunsford, when we think about what parents have had to go through, I don't think there's anything wrong with thinking about school as a place where kids learn, but also where kids are safe and cared for. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily just call it only babysitting, but, you know, there is an aspect of need for families to have a place for kids to be, whether it's school or elsewhere. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I don't think that it's unfair that all of us who went through school and intended very much to educate our children in the way we were educated, that built our lives around the idea that for 12 years, they are somewhere between the hours of like 8 and 3, that's a place they are. Mm-hmm. And we made decisions based on, you know, those assumptions that were entirely fair. And I think anybody 2 years ago suggesting that isn't a fair assumption would have been laughed out of the room.
Yeah.
It's hard enough for families to accommodate for school breaks and summer, suddenly being called upon to absorb your child into your home. And again, not just because they're there, but that require your active participation to bring them through schoolwork that at a certain point, I think all of us lose mastery of. I don't remember the quadratic formula. I would have to do some remedial work myself to help my kids. And that's put an enormous burden on us. Even before the pandemic, women are expected to work like they have no children and parent like they have no job. And that has only been exacerbated by the situation. Mm.
And before I grab a phone call, Jen, for parents, you know, who are dealing with February break and, you know, kids know, even if they've been doing full remote, they may know, hey, it's break. How often do parents here, especially for parents of only children, play with me. And it's crushing for parents. It's really tough because that's what we want to do. But we're also trying to balance so much.
This is my problem. My son is 4. He is an only child. Every moment he is in the house, he wants to play with me. And as a legislator, I have evening events. I have been on 12 to 14 hours of Zoom meetings almost this entire session, and he's right outside the door, and sometimes he's just sitting on my lap. Sometimes he's playing a game at my feet just because he wants to spend time with me, and it is breaking my heart that I can't interact with him the way he needs me to and wants me to, because my work actually takes longer because it's remote. If I was doing these things in person, I wouldn't have as many meetings because people would need to travel. I wouldn't be doing two or three of them at once because I wouldn't be expected to be in multiple places at the same time. Remote working has made us work more than before. We have no downtime. There, you have to completely shut off and create boundaries to make sure your kids have space to be with you. And as a result, my kids been going to bed at 10 o'clock at night because I want to spend time with him. You know, I've been pushing bedtime just for connectivity with him.
Talking to Jen Lunsford, member of the New York State Assembly, in a moment I'm going to ask her to detail the three bills that she has just put forward regarding child care in this state. But before that, let me grab a phone call from Julia in Fairport. Go ahead, Julia.
Hi. I just want to thank Assemblywoman Jen Lunsford for being on the call today. I myself am a healthcare worker. I work part-time, and I structured my life when I decided to have a second child that was delivered in June so that I would have, you know, child care situation worked out in such a way that my family could sort of fill in, because I know how expensive infant child care is, and mm-hmm. that situation has changed in the last hour, or not that last hour, sorry, the last couple of months.
I'm sure it's also changed in the last hour.
Probably.
It has. It changes on a daily basis. It's left me having to use my paid family leave, which I'm very happy to have and feel empowered to have and to use, but I'm having to basically take time off work in order to be home with my child when I had structured my life in such a way that I wouldn't have had to. And so I'm looking forward to hearing what the plan is, because I'm eagerly awaiting some changes.
Well, and we'll dig into that in a second, but Jen, you just want to make some general remarks based on Julia's, I mean, I'm sure you're hearing this all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, workers like Julia who are in healthcare, who can't necessarily do their job remotely, are in a whole different situation, having to make the decision. You know, I was able to take my child out of daycare during the three months at the beginning of the pandemic because we weren't sure if it was safe or not. Yeah, and not everybody gets to make that decision. And they had to make the very difficult choice of whether putting their kid in danger was more important than paying their bills. And it was a very challenging decision people had to make. And I think especially for people who have had babies during this pandemic, what a terrible situation to be in. We are all between a rock and a hard place, and juggling all of those needs is something that we need to contend with. Again, not just because of this pandemic, but because this is just a slightly worse version of what normally happens.
Yeah. And so Julia, what would, absent what Jen's about to talk about with the specifics of her bills, what would you say you need most right now?
I just need childcare to be more affordable. And I mean, I fully respect and appreciate, and I'm incredibly grateful for the work that our childcare providers do provide. My other son is in preschool and his teacher is amazing. So I don't want it to come at a cost of what they're making and what their livelihoods are. If anything, they should definitely be making more. But it's just, yeah, it's not manageable for us to be able to have more than one child in childcare and be able to afford it.
Well, I appreciate the call, Julia, and good luck to you. So let's talk to the Assembly member about these specifics then. Three different bills. The first one, increase the child and dependent care tax credit. Tell us about this one.
Just so people understand the difference between a tax credit and a tax deduction, a tax credit reduces the amount of tax that you owe, and a deduction is money you get back. So just so people appreciate that difference. Right now, there is a child and dependent care tax credit. I get to write off to a certain amount the amount of money I spend on child care per year. What my bill does is it greatly expands that tax credit. It makes it less dependent on earnings and more about how many kids you have in daycare. I am pulling up for you. Sorry, I was walking around. The specific numbers, but basically I increase the cap on what can be written off, and we step it up to account for having more children in the family in a broader way than the law currently allows. This would make parents able to offset their yearly childcare costs in a bigger way. So it has less of an immediate impact, but generally, you're effectively spending pre-tax dollars on daycare, and that will help reduce the overall burden to people's budgets.
Okay. How many people do you think this will help, generally speaking?
So here in Monroe County, you're talking about probably tens of thousands of families will be impacted by an expanded tax credit based on how many people are in daycare. Daycare, absolutely, no matter where you go or how old your child, is going to cost more than the tax credit cap, even at the expanded amount. So you are talking about families, unless they are in part-time daycare, extremely part-time daycare, maxing out the tax credit in every situation. So if you are a family who pays for daycare, this bill helps you.
Likely includes Julie in Fairport, then, who called in earlier?
Absolutely would.
Okay. So that's bill number one. Number two, capping child care copays at 20%. Explain this one.
So we're going to get a little bit into the weeds here, and I apologize.
That's okay.
Child care is a complex topic that deals not just with people who pay for child care, but people who provide child care. If you get subsidies from the state for child care, which I will tell you, if you qualify for subsidies right now, only 17% of people in New York who qualify actually receive them. So there is a funding problem with our subsidy program, and I can talk more later about plans to help address that. But what this bill does is anyone who pays for a subsidy pays a copay like you do at your doctor's office. That copay varies by county. Some counties require up to 35% of your income level above the poverty line. My bill caps it at 20 and makes it uniform across counties. That uniformity helps create stability, not just for people who are paying for childcare, but for the providers as well. And it greatly reduces the amount of out-of-pocket costs that people on subsidies are forced to pay. Obviously, people who are qualifying for childcare subsidies are lower income to begin with. Our lower income families have been the most impacted by COVID. So this has a real dollars in your pocket immediate impact. And I'm very excited to say that this particular proposal made it into the governor's executive budget. There is a $40 million federal grant that's already line itemed to pay for this on an ongoing basis. So I'm very optimistic that we're going to see this or maybe even a better version of this particular bill come out of the budget this season.
All right. So this one is a little bit wonkier. And so I want to make sure I want to make sure I'm a good student on this because I want people to understand it. And I struggled a little before the program. So according to the Empire Justice Center, in what we're talking about here is how much of your income over the poverty level that you pay for a child care subsidy. Is that correct? Is that how you?
Correct.
Okay, that's how you phrase that. Okay.
Well, so there's a copay. If you qualify for a child care subsidy, you are making right now a percentage above the federal poverty line. You pay out of pocket some percentage of your salary towards that copay. Right now, that's not uniform. Some counties, you're paying up to 35%.
Erie County is one of them. So Erie County is 35%. Yes. Wayne County, 25%. Monroe County, 20%. Seneca, Yates, Ontario, Cayuga counties, 20%. So it changes based on where you live, and you want to make that uniform.
Correct. And this gets very complicated if you're one of the people who live near a county line, where you're working in one county.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. Absolutely. Yeah.
You're one of my families up in Webster. You live in Ontario and you work in, SOTUS. You know, there's issues there as well.
Okay. And so what this does is it makes it uniform, and overall you expect this to be saving families money.
I do. Oh, absolutely. And not just saving our families money, but saving the families that have been most devastated by COVID money.
I want to make sure I understand as well. You said 17% of people who qualify for child care subsidies in the state actually receive them?
Yes. The number is slightly higher in Monroe County. We're better at it. The last number I saw in Monroe County is 30%.
Why?
Money's not there.
The money is not there? See, I thought this is
child care.
But this, well, I don't, you know, I don't mean to be naive about child care subsidies. I mean, I know how tight things can get. But I thought for a moment when you said 17% of people in the state who qualify for child care subsidies actually receive them. I figured that's because most people don't know how to apply for them, or most people don't know that they're available. What you're saying is they should be getting these benefits, and the money's not there.
Yeah. There's also a slots problem. The amount of slots available for facilities that accept subsidies is too low. So let's say you qualify and you get the funding, but you can't find a subsidized spot in the state. You can't find a child care facility willing to take another subsidized kid. There is a report by the Children's Agenda 2019 at some point, maybe early 2020, pre-pandemic, that outlined the problem that we have in our county with regard to child care slots. We are not as bad as some other parts of the state, but we do have our own problems here.
Okay. Now, is there any realistic sense of what it would mean to get to 100% of people who qualify for child care subsidies receiving them? I mean, I don't mean to sort of be flippant about this, but would you feel good about that number being 50%, 70%?
I mean,
where do we need to go?
I have good news on this. This is not one of my bills, but this is something that we are pushing for in the assembly, and there will be a press conference on Tuesday where Assemblyperson Sarah Clark, who represents the other side of the county from me, she represents parts of the city, Irondequoit. Me and her have teamed up with Assemblyman Andy Hevesy, who's the chair of Children and Families, to meet with all of the child care advocates in the state to come up with a plan to really strike while the iron's hot, to say, this is the moment where everyone's looking at child care. Let's really take the bull by the horns and make good change. I'm going to try to do this in the least wonky way possible. My apologies.
Okay.
There is currently $469 million in federal appropriations that have not been given out yet. The Office of Children and Family Services has until next week to come up with a plan for how they want to spend that money. We are happy to tell them that we've come up with a plan. We have an idea. We would like to advocate for, among other things, and there I'll be putting out some information about this on my social media in the next few days. We would like to advocate for increasing the enrollment for subsidies to 85% of the state median income. And what that means in dollars is that families earning roughly $60,000 a year would now qualify for subsidies. That funding would come from federal dollars that are earmarked right now. We also are pushing for in the budget a plan that makes that permanent, again, using earmarked federal child care dollars. There's other parts of this plan that help our providers and find ways to ease up the funding on their end as well. But this would qualify more middle-income families, more families that are struggling in that zone of whether or not they can continue working, whether they can take a promotion, because another problem with subsidies is there's a cliff. If you earn more than the cap, you lose your subsidies. So can you take a promotion? Can you take a raise of a dollar more an hour? Can you take a raise of 15 cents more an hour? Because you will lose your child care subsidies, and it creates a donut hole where people have to make the difficult decision between advancing in their career and earning more money and giving up a subsidy on their child care. By broadening that enrollment cap and putting real money behind it, we will allow more families to access quality childcare and to make good decisions about their careers when it comes to childcare.
$60,000 would be the qualifying line for being eligible for these subsidies under this proposal. That's right?
Roughly. There's some dollars and cents around that. But
okay. So roughly $60,000. What's the current number?
The current number qualifying for child care subsidies, I believe, is 150% of the poverty level. I may be incorrect about that. Don't quote me. I'm taking a look at my notes right now.
Okay. Significantly less than 60,000.
Significantly less.
Yeah. Okay. So forgive me here because
I'm sorry. You called me about a very wonky subject.
No, this is wonky, but this is going to impact families and child care. I mean, This is only most of the people listening, at least right now or sometime in their lives. I mean, it's a big, big number. But if right now, Assemblymember Lunsford, if right now we don't have the slots, if right now we're not able to help people at the current level, how can you expand to $60,000 per family and know that there will be slots, there, know that there will be places where kids can go and get the care that they need? I mean, do we have all of the working components together to make this happen?
So one of the reasons that it is harder for child care providers to accept subsidized spots is because there are rules around subsidies. Like, for instance, social services departments are not required to pay for absences. So if your child is absent and they are on subsidies, even though a private payer would be required to continue paying for the child care slot, the subsidy is not. Right now, I have been confirmed that I was right about 150% of the poverty level. So there, look at me. No one thinks. the other bill that I'm carrying that we haven't gotten to yet creates a requirement that social services departments pay for a minimum of 12 absences in a six-month period, and that OCFS, the Office of Children and Family Services, can put a cap on that, but at no less than 24 absences in a six-month period. By guaranteeing to child care providers that they will get more than 2 weeks of absences paid for, we will be equipping them to accept more subsidized kids.
Okay. I hope listeners are following all of this. Jen Lunsford, member of the
I'm
New York
so
State.
Sorry.
No, no. The reason we wanted you on this program, explaining exactly what you're working on, because I know it's a point of passion for you. And in a moment, after we take our only break of the hour, I'm going to bring in someone else who can help calculate some numbers and explain what has me a little bit confused. And that's Pete Nabosny, who's on the line with us from the Children's
Yay!
Agenda.
Yay! Perfect. That's exactly who we need, is Pete Nabosny.
Somebody put out a bat signal.
He's been here the whole time.
Somebody put out a bat signal. It's just a big pair of glasses. And Pete always responds. So let's take this break. We'll come back. And then we're also going to talk a little bit more about how the member of the Assembly who's with us this hour is talking about making sure child care providers are supported now and into the future so they can provide the services and care that our kids really need. Let's take that break, and we're right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about reopening schools in Rochester. The RCSD was the last district in Monroe County to go away from the full remote model. They welcomed students back to the classroom earlier this month. But many parents are choosing not to send their kids back, and the Rochester Teachers Association largely says they're opposed to it for now for a wide range of reasons. We'll talk to parents. We'll talk to the RTA next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And we should all think about if there were a bat signal for us, what it would look like. What do you think, Pete Nabosny from the Children's Agenda? What does it look like for you?
I don't know, a guy with a beard and glasses?
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. The spectacles.
Something like that.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you. Thank you, by the way.
Just wanted to call in to, first of all, thank Assemblymember Lunsford for sponsoring this legislation. It's really great, and all three pieces I know would be really helpful to families in Monroe County and throughout the state here. And then I just wanted to kind of also, I was sort of involved in some of the calculations of that 17% number. And there's like a lot that goes into it in terms of uptake. And the Assembly member is absolutely right. I mean, funding is kind of the core component of it. What happens in New York State, because we've delegated so many decisions to counties, there's just this patchwork of eligibility around the state. And counties, you know, to kind of speak to in their defense, they say, hey, we've got limited funds here from the state. We have to set some priorities. So Monroe County right now has pretty expansive policies. They're, you know, covering a lot of families and has, you know, really, you know, has seen a higher level of families receiving subsidy. But plenty of other counties say, like, we'll cover you while you're working, but if you get laid off, you're not going to receive subsidized care while you're laid off. And so that family, which would be eligible, they are eligible in terms of income, that the parent is in the workforce, which is how we sort of define eligibility. They're not eligible because of the rules that county has established. And I think it much more broadly, this patchwork of policies which the assembly members' legislation would start to address, you know, by saying we need some standard rules across the state, it just makes it incredibly difficult for families to access and maintain subsidies and to understand what they might actually be eligible for. Because in the past, a job training program, maybe they couldn't receive subsidy while they were in that program, and now they can, but they are aware of that. And so there's when we create really cumbersome and difficult sets of rules for families, you just see lower and lower participation rates. If you make the system simpler, you're going to see more families take advantage of it. And there's plenty of additional things we can do to make the child care subsidy system simpler in New York State. But these bills, particularly the co-pays and the absences, are really important kind of foundational components to setting a fairer standard across the state. And then that will, with additional funding, allow more families to participate in the system and benefit from child care assistance.
Can I ask?
I think go
ahead, Jen.
Piggyback off that a little bit as well. I think it's something else the subsidy system doesn't capture is people who work jobs at non-traditional hours. There are very few child care facilities in Monroe County that are 24 hours. So God forbid you work outside of, like, you know, my daycare is open 6 to 6. If I worked from 7 to 2, I would have a problem. There just aren't slots for people who, you know, if you're working overnight shifts, there's a decent chance that you are lower income. So you qualify, but there's just no facilities for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's why when we talk to folks at the national level who really look at this stuff across the country, they say, given the sort of current setup of the child care system in America, the highest rate you could really get to would be about 50%. Because of things like people who work really odd hours all the time, it's really hard to maintain an arrangement with a child care provider if your hours are changing constantly. They work overnight where there just isn't a program available to them. Some families, just regardless of kind of what the program looks like, they're going to choose not to enroll in it because they may not want to take part in a government program, you know, so on and so forth. But there's a pretty big distance between where New York State is at that 17%, 20% in a good year, and then the 50% that folks at the national level say that's where we get to if we had more funding and uniformity of rules and things like that. So we've got a lot of work to do.
Can I ask both of you to respond to an email, since in your own ways you've worked on these related issues? This is an email from a listener named Elsie in Warsaw, who says, the proposal to increase child care tax credits on tax returns does not help those low-income families that can barely pay their rent or buy food for their families on a weekly or monthly basis, even in non-pandemic times, end quote. Assemblymember Lunsford, what do you think?
That's correct, because if you don't pay anything or much in taxes, a credit doesn't really do much for you. One of the things I'm aiming for with that particular bill is to help expand affordability to middle-income families. That is, you know, again, it's not going to be inclusive. It's not a silver bullet. But there's a lot of families in my district in particular who fall into that middle range where they don't qualify for subsidies, but daycare is still prohibitively expensive. And this is aimed at helping them out a little bit.
Okay. That makes sense to you, Pete Nabosny.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think the structure of sort of how we support people affording the cost of childcare, or in some cases don't, in New York, like most of the country, is, you know, if you're below a certain income level, hopefully you're able to receive subsidized care, which also helps because as the person emailing you said, it's hard when folks don't have the sort of resources to pay upfront and then receive that amount back at tax time. You know, that's something that's sort of a privilege that's difficult for most people, particularly lower income households, to have those kind of resources. It is very helpful to middle income families. So for low income families, we try to strengthen the subsidy system. And for, you know, more middle income families, the tax credit kind of approach, while still not perfect, makes a lot more sense. And so trying to strengthen both of those things is increasing affordability for more families who, you know, who, because of the high cost of care, there's a lot of families at a lot of different income levels that really struggle to afford to pay for childcare.
All right, Pete. Well, I will let you go back to preparing for Connections next week when we're going to talk about federal bills.
You got it.
It will take Pete a whole week to prep.
We are going to talk about federal bills, including, by the way, Pete Nabosny will join us next week. We're talking about the Romney plan, among others. So there's a lot of interesting things in the work, but I'm always appreciating the time from the wonks and the experts like Pete Nabosny, who help all of us understand these issues. Thanks for calling in, Pete.
All right. Thanks for covering this.
Pete Nabosny is the policy director for the Children's Agenda, calling in. And Jen Lunsford is our guest for the hour, a member of the New York State Assembly. We're talking child care. Before I get back to Jen's proposed bills, let me address one more point here. An email from Ray Ray in Rochester, who says, if the money for this isn't there, wondering what Assemblymember Lunsford thinks about taxing the rich for that money. Is she signing on to all six bills that are part of Invest in Our New York, a progressive income tax, capital gains tax, heirs tax, billionaires tax, a corporate tax, and a Wall Street tax, like her colleague, Assemblymember Damon Meeks, has done?
So first off, the money for this comes primarily from federal funds. If you go to my Assembly website, you will see me asking a question to the Commissioner of the Office of Children and Family Services, particularly about the 20% cap. And whether they were confident that year to year they could pay for that with what are called prior year federal funds, federal grants. So we are making sure that we are not overly burdening our counties, that we are not putting this back onto localities to pay for, and that we are ensuring that there's a lot of federal lines of funding for childcare. They come from a lot of different pockets, so it's hard to talk about childcare funding really without, like, I need like a Katie Porter style whiteboard to really lay all this out.
She's getting the kind of the standard for the wonkiness of this stuff, isn't she? Did I lose Jen?
Sorry, Evan. My phone dropped and literally broke my headphones. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Oh, pandemic interviewing is so interesting.
It's been a good time.
I'm sorry for that. You were saying about Representative Porter, who has been she has become, by the way, sort of the standard for a wonk-filled attack on certain issues. I mean, like attacking issues with data. I would say. But anyway, I didn't mean you off. Go ahead.
Well, when we talk about funding, there's a lot of different federal streams, and there are also our state streams. And one of the things that we are focusing on is making sure that this federal money that's been earmarked specifically for childcare as part of these COVID relief packages goes directly to families and providers. So I don't want to start to muddle this with revenue raisers, which of course I support. I ran on revenue raisers. I ran on taxing the ultra rich. I ran on Pedicare. I ran on billionaire wealth tax. But those are not the lines of funding that we're talking about right now as it pertains to these particular programs.
Okay. So it sounds to me like you are open to those, to that slate of six proposals, but you don't necessarily see it as tied to child care funding.
Not right now, no. Because so much of this child care funding is coming from federal sources.
Okay. Have we covered your bill supporting child care providers, 5017?
So that we did talk about that a little bit. That was covering absences.
Okay, that's covering absences. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Now, before I get back to a little bit more feedback from listeners, how realistic is it that you think there will be the kind of support necessary to get all of this done?
I think that there is an enormous amount of support. Right now, one of the things that we have done very deliberately and very carefully is made sure that all the stakeholders were at the table while we were having these discussions. Some of this work was done before I took office, so I am standing on the shoulders of the people who have done the good work behind me to bring this across the finish line. And I think that it's really important, whenever you're trying to build coalitions, that you make sure that you involve the legislators who have been working on these for a long time, that you involve child care providers and families and the organizations that do the work, like the Children's Agenda, where Pete Nabosny was coming from, who can speak to how in practice this is put in place. So because we have done years, really, of groundwork, making sure that all the pieces are in place,
we're ready to strike. And on Tuesday at 10 o'clock for our press conference, you will see a very broad coalition of people standing up and pushing the governor to, first off, make sure that the $469 million of federal appropriations are put towards this plan that we will be proposing, but also that in the budget, we have a $485 million budget ask to make these plans permanent. That groundswell of people saying that this matters to us is how we get work done. So if this is something that you support, I encourage you to join us for a day of action on Tuesday, and then also to call the governor and tell the governor your story and why this matters to you and why affordable child care is a burden for your family, is preventing you from doing what you need to do to provide, and how it impacts you from all, really all corners of the state.
Let me get back to your phone calls. Manuel in Rochester next. Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Dawson. I've been listening to your talk here on this issue, and I don't know. At times, when I'm listening to you, to me it seems like you're acting coy. You see that you're not, and the things that you deal with on the radio are, you know, would make it seem to me or to the listener that you should be well versed on the topics that you choose yourself to deal with. You know, and on each hour during the week, you know, and yeah.
You think I'm not well versed on what we're talking about?
Well, I mean, here. This way you sound is like you're like this lady that just this legislature that you know it's like you let her talk, okay. And she seems to be very, you know, I mean, upset about the issue of her inability to send her children to daycare, you know, which is a matter for a mother, you understand, of urgent, you know, need. And to have a system like we have, you understand, that makes it difficult for Americans to deal with this subject, among all the other issues that this society is dealing with.
I don't think I understand what you're saying here, Manuel. Can you kind of zero in on a point?
Yeah, well, I mean, just child care itself, I mean, it goes on forever and never gets resolved, you know, to people's, The thing is that it seems to me, and this is an opinion that I have of you, okay, that you're in a sense allowing, yes, a person to let steam off by addressing an issue of importance to them, family, their children, especially a mother, you understand? And you just, you know, letting off steam and pacifying and keeping people to continue to trust and rely on a governmental system that does not address nothing.
Okay, all right. We've got to jump in here because we're down to 90 seconds, Manuel. I'll let the assembly member jump in for some final thoughts on your remarks there. And listen, man. This is wonky stuff, but I came as prepared as I could be. There are certain things that I wasn't involved in the creation of this legislation or why certain thresholds of who actually gets subsidies versus who doesn't, why that's happening. You're right. I'm not working on the inner workings of all that, but I wish you could see the notes that I have here. I mean, as the assembly members...
This is a very complicated topic.
But as, as you said, Jen...
It took me and, like, 10 other people whose full-time job this is to craft the legislation that I'm talking about. And this is something that I do live and breathe. I don't expect anybody to be an expert on this. I am not an expert on this. This is why we have Pete Nabosny to come,
but,
you know, help us out.
But
and,
30
and
seconds, Jared, because I think what Manuel is saying is you're asking government to solve a problem that government cannot or should not be solving.
Well, we have a situation right now that is untenable, and our society and our marketplace are in no position to pull us out of it. If we ever needed government, we need it now. But we have a system that is well supported by government in theory. And I think if we provide the right tools and the right framework, government can do good work here. And that's what I plan to do, is make government work. That's why I ran for office. That's what I hope to do in this job.
All right. I guess I've just been letting you blow off steam, it turns out.
Which I appreciate. I mean, that's valuable as well.
I appreciate the phone call, Manuel, and I assure you that the team behind this program works its backside off to be as prepared as we can be for every conversation. That's why I had some of the wonky numbers on what all these individual counties in our areas, where their current caps are. Why Erie is 35 and Wayne is 25 and Monroe is 20 and Seneca and Yates are 20. Well, look, we could do this all again, but I'll just say to the member of the Assembly, thank you for the time, and let's talk again soon.
Thank you for the time, Evan. Have a great day.
Jen Lunsford, member of the New York State Assembly. And we do have more connections. We'll be ready for it next.